You're listening to the Bliss Runner Podcast, episode number 13. This podcast is for any woman who has ever had a challenge in her sex life. Whether you've lost interest in sex in your long-term relationship, orgasms have become elusive, or you've just been longing for something more, something deeper that you can't quite even articulate, this podcast is here to help. In this show, we'll explore how you can transform your experience of sex by learning the subtle art of awakening your sexual energy. Now, this is not just woo-woo stuff. It's tangible, and it's having a profound effect on women's lives. We'll hear stories by women like you and me who've moved from lack of sexual enjoyment to incredible, expanded, ecstatic states by accessing this energy inside. We'll also talk to authors, teachers, and practitioners in the field for guidance on how you can get started on this deeply gratifying journey. I can tell you that it has completely changed my life, and I know it can enrich yours. I'm really glad you're here. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the show. This is the final episode in the first season of the Bliss Runner podcast, and I can't believe we have already arrived here. I have been having such a wonderful time getting to interview all of these marvelous authors and experts and remarkable women who've shared their stories with us. So before I start season two of the podcast, I'm going to take about a month off, although off is not really the right word because I'll still be working away on all of the other Bliss Runner pieces and parts. Please be sure to subscribe on iTunes so that you won't miss any future episodes. And if you haven't already, you can subscribe to my newsletter and I'll let you know when things start again. Today's guest is a little bit of a departure from my previous guests in that he's going to be speaking primarily to the metaphysical aspects of sexual energy. More and more these days, I find myself wanting to go deeper into my understanding of what this sexual energy is all about. And this guest is going to help us talk about that. His name is Jim McCarty, and he's one of the individuals responsible for bringing forth channeled material known as the Law of One, or sometimes called the raw material. This material was channeled during more than 100 sessions held during the early 1980s with Carla Ruckert, who was the channel, Don Elkins, who was the questioner, and Jim McCarty, our guest today, who was the scribe. Included within the information presented during these sessions was a fair amount of material about the nature of sexual energy. And Jim is going to share with us his insights as to those teachings, both based on decades of research and study in this field, but also based on his own relationship with Carla Ruckert, which spanned more than three decades, and in which they shared a very unique and beautiful sacred sexual relationship. So let's join our conversation. Welcome to the show, Jim. It's such an honor to have you here.
It is my pleasure to be here.
I think what we will start with to give the listeners a little bit of an understanding of where we're going. Why don't you tell us a little bit about LL Research, what it is that you do, and how you came to do this work?
Okay. Well, LL Research started back in, 1968 would be the time when Don and Carla first came together. They were together for 12 years before I joined them. So Don was interested in UFOs and the paranormal from the time he was a high school senior. That was in 1947. He was taking flying lessons from Captain Tom Mantell, a member of the Kentucky National Guard, and it turned out that there's an unidentified flying object that was reported around Mayfield, Kentucky, when Captain Mantell just happened to be in the air with two other pilots, and they asked him to check it out. And he checked it out, ended up crashing and dying after chasing a UFO, which made national news. Okay. And since he was the one that was giving Don the flying lessons, Don all of a sudden became interested in UFOs because Captain Mantell was 25 and Don was 17, so they're not that far apart in age, and they became friends. So for the rest of his high school and then into college years, he studied everything he could in the way of physics, chemistry, physical sciences, trying to figure out the nature of the universe, how it all worked. Mm-hmm. So he went through University of Louisville and got degrees in mechanical engineering. But he also did regressive hypnosis then, probably over 200 sessions, to try to figure out if reincarnation really was the way things worked. And for him, he proved it to himself. People just had one life after another and just seemed to corroborate the way it all worked. Mm-hmm. So then in 1961, he was still a professor at U of L, and he had gotten information from a fellow in Detroit who had a channeling group, a meditation group that channeled supposedly extraterrestrial sources mm-hmm. because of a face-to-face encounter that the fellow who was leading the group had had with a UFO entity about 2 years previous. And this entity had stayed with him basically in a telepathic contact. Some of the early contacts back in the 50s had this quality of a lingering telepathic contact that would remain with the Earth person who had the experience. Right. So in the channeling, they gave information about how other people could form meditation groups that would have the opportunity, perhaps, to channel extraterrestrial sources. And this information made its way to Don, and Don was very interested in it. So he decided to try an experiment. At the time, he was a professor of physics at the University of Louisville, and his class at the Speed Scientific School was all male at that time. It's all been co-ed by now. But he got together 12 of the guys and decided to have an experiment. One of the guys said, well, can I bring my girlfriend? And he said, sure. And it turned out to be Carla Ruckert. Mm-hmm. So they had two or three meditation meetings a week. And were Don didn't tell them what they were going to do. He was a scientist. He was trying to see if this would happen on its own.
Right.
And most of the guys did get what we call conditioning. They began to feel a presence. Their heart started beating faster. They started sweating a bit. They got pressure in their forehead. Maybe their tongue started moving or their mouth started opening and shutting. And some of them said later they were getting words, but nobody wanted to say anything because they were afraid they were making it up. That it was all imagination in their head. So finally, the fellow from Detroit came down and sat in on the group, and he channeled his source, who was trying to get through to these folks. And they said, we have contact with you, but you all want so much control over the experience that nobody is saying anything. If you just say the words in your mind as they come to you, then analyze it after it's over, then it'll work. If you try to analyze it while it's going on, it will stop. Mm-hmm. So this is how Don and Carla met, and that was 1962. So there was Carla had a marriage to her boyfriend in between that didn't work out, and so she eventually returned to Louisville, and Don was still working with the meditation group, and they got together in 68 then, and that is how LNL research began, with investigations into the paranormal in general and into UFOs and channeling in particular.
Mm-hmm. There's a great deal of information about all of this history and all of the discoveries made along the way on your website, llresearch.org. It's a vast library of information and resources, and I recommend that you, if you're curious about any of this, to head over there, because you'll find all kinds of information. So bring us then forward to between the late 60s and the early 80s. That phase was primarily focused on this meditative research, trying to make contact, and then also exploring other paranormal phenomena out in the world. Is that right?
Yes. Carla, interestingly enough, was the only one in that group who did not learn how to channel at that time. Mm-hmm. She liked the messages. She loved silent meditation. But it would be 12 years until she actually learned how to channel in 1974. Mm-hmm. And by that time, all of the guys who were a member of that group, they'd either gotten jobs, gotten married, moved out of town, or one reason or another were no longer available for channels. And Carla had joined Don in 68, so by the time 74 rolled around and Don was the only channel left, he said, well, free lunch is over, Carla. It's time for you to learn how to channel.
Yeah, so she was reluctant.
Yeah, she was a reluctant channel. She really didn't have anything against it at all. It just that she would rather sit and listen to it and meditate silently. Mm-hmm. So in 74, they began sessions with other folks who were interested in forming a meditation group. And she did learn how to channel. And a book, Voices of the Confederation, came out of that effort where it wasn't actually Don teaching her how to channel, although he did do that. But the Confederation sources that we channeled, or they channeled at that time, were the ones that were actually teaching how to channel. Mm. So besides that, Carla also had rheumatoid arthritis and had problems with her kidneys. She'd had a near-death experience when she was 13 and her kidneys failed. Mm. So she had some health problems, and she and Don would travel to various places looking for what we would call alternative forms of healing, a psychic surgery in the Philippines and in Mexico City. So in Mexico City, they ran into a woman by the name of Pachita, and she had learned the healing skills on the battlefield with Pancho Villa when there were various battles going on in that area, and they were fighting for the independence of their particular part of Mexico. And she was able to repair Carla's kidney by, they said it just seemed like she created the kidney, because they put out a call for a kidney in Mexico City, and all of them were taken by traditional medical facilities who were trying to implant kidneys into other patients. Mm-hmm. So Dr. Andrea Puharich was there. He was the one that brought Uri Geller to the United States, and he was with Don and Carla along with a few other folks, and he said that to him the what was in this little glass container looked like renal material, but it wasn't a kidney. However, Pachita was able to utilize it as a kidney, and it solved Carla's problems. Whatever it was, it solved Carla's problems. And so then they also, a few years later, traveled to Manila, the Philippines, and ran into a fellow named Benji Bellacano, who was a psychic surgeon. And he worked on Carla in some minor ways that I guess there were three growths on her the good kidney that had not had a problem in the past, and he removed those, and Don had some surgery. So they investigated psychic surgery of one kind or another.
So when they went to the Philippines, did they have particular maladies in mind that they wanted to have worked on, or was it more that they presented themselves and the psychic surgeons found these things in their body to work on?
Well, both. They had certain things they wanted to work on. For example, when they saw Pachita, Carla wanted to have her arthritis worked on, but Pachita said, your kidneys are what is the problem. That is where your arthritis comes from. Mm. And it was the same in the Philippines with Benji Bellacano, that he found the root cause of a symptom that they thought was actually the problem.
I see.
So in both cases, they went with the idea of getting one thing fixed, and they did get that repaired, but it was because of another more basic cause.
I see.
So they did that, and then in later years, they examined the concept of mediumship, the type of healing that can come from a person who serves as a medium and produces ectoplasm, this smoky cigar-like substance that comes out of their mouth, and that you can communicate also with relatives that have passed on into the spirit world or with other entities. So there was a fellow by the name of James Tingley up in Ohio, that it was Camp Chesterfield, Ohio, that Don and Carla went there. They investigated a lot of people who said that they could do that, but they found more frauds than they did the real thing. But where there's smoke, there's fire, and they found the real thing when they found James Tingley. Uh-huh. And they were able to communicate with what turned out to be Don's mother. In the family, she was known as Sister. Mm-hmm. And she was able to take this gauzy smoke-like substance and to form it around a body that looked exactly like she did when she was incarnate. And Don said that he could even see the hairs on her head and the lines on her face and so forth. And so we talked to her, and then she thanked Carla for taking such good care of Don. Now, at the time, Carla didn't know what Don's mother looked like, mm-hmm. didn't know this was Don's mother. And on the way home, when Don was flying them back home, he was, he took those lessons, so he was a pilot.
Yeah.
And he said, do you know who Sister is? And she said, I don't know any nuns. No, I don't know what Sister. He said, no, that was my mother. So Then there was one other entity that they met there. He said he was Moses. He formed this imposing image of who could well be Moses, you know, the long hair and the robes and so forth. Uh-huh. And just to show that he was real, he hit Carla on the wrist hard enough to leave a bruise. Then he walked through her, turned around, walked back through her, and raised his hands and said, "Go forth and teach." And then he pooled into a little puddle on the floor and was gone. Mm. So that they investigated that and found that, you know, James Tingley really was a real thing in that field. So
wow.
they were interested in a lot of different things.
Yes. Oh my gosh. There's so much here. We could probably talk for a full week on all of this stuff. It's so fascinating. What did Carla feel when the entity passed through her?
She didn't feel much of anything. She was just amazed that he was disappearing through her body. She mm-hmm. She was just overwhelmed by the fact that here was this entity that had been talking to her that just slapped her on the wrist and it was moving through her body and back through.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
But, you know, there were so many things that happened during the time that Don and Carla spent together that after a while she wasn't so overwhelmed because she began to understand more of not exactly the physics, but the metaphysics, the spiritual right. reality behind it all.
Right. That the strange was really the normal.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So it was shortly after that she decided to go ahead and learn how to channel. And bring us forward then in time to when the time period of the raw contact began, and your entry into this circle that really allowed this to take place.
Okay, like I said, 74 was the year Carla learned how to channel. Coincidentally, that was the year I moved to Kentucky. I was originally from Nebraska, and I was an old hippie at the time, and I was part of the Back to the Land movement, where the old hippies had decided, well, let's simplify our life. Let's take Thoreau's idea, simplify, mm-hmm. and buy some land, build our own homes, have children, homeschool the children, and work together in cooperative communities. So I had decided to do that. I bought some land, and I built a log cabin. I was off the grid. But one evening, I had my little battery-powered radio turned on to a station WKQQ in Lexington, Kentucky, and they were interviewing Don Elkins and Carla Ruckert on the topic of UFOs. Mm. And I was absolutely fascinated because they were talking about the philosophy that was being promulgated by the entities in the UFOs, not just what the UFOs looked like or how many there were or how they landed or anything like that.
Right.
So I said to myself, you know, I've got to meet these folks. But it took me, I guess, a full 8 months to figure out how to do that. I didn't go around with a plan, you know, how am I going to meet these? I just remembered them. And we had food buying co-ops in an area. Mm-hmm. And we would place our orders every 2 weeks and get together and talk and have a meal and so forth. And I met some folks from the other side of the same county I lived in, and we were talking about UFOs and channeling. And I said, you know, I heard an interview a couple of months ago about Don Elkins and Carla Ruckert. Oh, yeah, we know them. We're part of that group. We can introduce you. Uh-huh. So that was how I met Don and Carla. For the next year, then I drove up from my little place in central Kentucky to Louisville, about 70 or so miles, and I was part of their Sunday night meditation. And they lived inside the downtown metro Louisville at the time. Mm-hmm. They'd been there for 12 years in this apartment where they had these meditation meetings. But when I joined them, when I started coming to their meditations, they were getting ready to move to the outskirts of Louisville into a really nice one-story house, oddly enough, built in the shape of an L, sitting on 6 acres of land. Mm-hmm. And I helped them move. And in that time coming to the meditations and helping them move, we became very good friends. And they invited me to join them.
Mm-hmm.
So I had been on the mailing list of another meditation group in Oregon for about 5 years. And I said, well, I really appreciate your offer, but I'm heading out to Oregon here this fall, and I'm going to be part of that group out there. And Donna said, well, if you change your mind, you know, it's a standing offer. So in October of 1980, I drove out to Oregon, and I spent about 3 months out there, and I really enjoyed the folks. It was everything I'd hoped it would be. But I had a chance to earn a whole lot of money, which kind of confused me because that's not why I went out there. And I thought, well, if I take this job that I'm being offered, I might not be able to pursue my spiritual path the way I want to. So I told the folks, I'm going to take the weekend off. I'm going to meditate and see what to do. Mm-hmm. So about 30 seconds into my meditation, I got a very clear image across the cloudless sky of my inner field of vision, said, return to Louisville, join Don and Carla. So I drove 2,500 miles back to Louisville and joined Don and Carla on December 23rd, 1980. Uh-huh. And we thought at the time that the first thing we would do would be to rewrite their book, Secrets of the UFO, which is a summary of Don's 25 years of investigating UFOs. Uh-huh. So for the next 3 weeks, I was doing some research. And then one day I decided, you know, I was doing the cooking for a group of three at that time. So I was out buying some groceries when Carla and Don were holding an intensive meditation to help a student learn how to channel. So there were three of them there. And it turned out that was the first raw contact 3 weeks after I got there. Mm. And that Carla had gone into trance, apparently. And I came back just as Don was asking about the coming earth changes. If you look at the first session, there's a place there where he asks about what they will be like. And Ross says, we must pause to deepen this instrument state. Because I had just walked through the front door and interrupted the first raw contact and had groceries in my arms. And I saw a session was going on. So I just walked on down the hall into the kitchen and put the groceries away. And afterward, I had never seen Don so excited in his life. He was a very laconic kind of fella. This world did not impress Don a lot. He thought people were pretty much crazy and they were going all kinds of directions with their emotions. And that, so he just kind of took things cool and easy. And, but he was excited and he said, we've got to get this transcribed. Can you transcribe this right away? I said, right now? He said, we really have to get this transcribed. So I did. And as I was transcribing it, I saw why he was excited, because it was just a huge leap forward in the kind of information that we'd ever gotten from any other source.
Right. Wow. How exciting. So how was it then determined that it would be the three of you? It sounds like there was another person person who was present during that first contact.
There was one other person present, and he did come to another session. Altogether, I think three people attended a total of four sessions. Otherwise, it was just Don, Carl, and I. Mm-hmm. We discovered that, well, as Ross said, three was the minimum number that was necessary for protection and support of the instrument. Mm-hmm. There could be more, but they had noted that it seemed to be most efficient with just the three of us. And there really wasn't anybody else that said, oh, can I be part of your sessions or anything? You know, that's just not what happened.
I see.
But what happened was that we seemed to come together for this purpose, that a lot of things just seemed to fall into place as if they were puzzle pieces that had been put together some other place and time, taken mm-hmm. apart, and here they were being reassembled.
Yeah.
It was the feeling of the whole thing. So that's the way it worked.
What was your understanding, or what is your understanding now, about what made Carla able to receive this contact at that time? Do you think she'd been undergoing psychic preparation for a number of years? I mean, apart from the fact that she had been practicing channeling for a little while, you know, what was your understanding of why this level of an entity was able to come through?
Well, it seems to be due to a number of factors. She seemed to have a gift for leaving her body that we never understood how it worked, but she could do it. But previous to this session, there was a couple in the meditation group that had been there for years. And while I was in Oregon that fall, one of them passed away. She'd been sick for a long time, and she told her husband, Tom, when I'm on the other side in the spirit world, I will contact you and let you know that I'm okay. And she gave him some information then, says, I'll tell you about this. So when she passed away, Tom asked Carla if she would be willing to try to contact Elaine. And Carla said, well, I'll give it a try. And this was the first time that Carla had gone into trance. And it happened twice. Tom asked her to do it a second time. And then she said, you know, it's really wearing on me. I don't want to do it again. I hope you've gotten everything you need. He said, yes, I got everything Elaine said that she would give me, so I'm satisfied. But Ra later said that it was that those two sessions of trance that had really prepared Carla for the raw contact. They were kind of like a tuning, mm-hmm. just getting ready. And also there was such a harmony between the three of us that we did not have to work at. It was like it was a gift. Mm-hmm. That we had been together elsewhere so long or so many times that just everything was so smooth and easy and balanced between us. Mm-hmm. We all had certain parts or ways of contributing to the group. And it, that harmony, Ross said, was also most important for sustaining the raw contact. And the third thing was Carla, since she was a baby, had this great desire to be of service to the Creator. When she was 2 years old, she could go to a magic garden. I guess this was the first time she actually left her body, but she was, had a birth defect when she was born. Her right eye was pointed towards her brow. And by the time she was, I think maybe 15 or 16 months, they could do a basic surgery to try to correct it. But she wore glasses and from the age of two. So one day her mother put her down for a nap and next to the window, and she closed the blinds. And Carla took her glasses off and put them in the blinds. And she noticed before she went to sleep that the sunlight from the outside shined through the lens of her glass in a certain way that created a beam of light. And she was able to slide out of her body, apparently, on that beam of light and go to a magic garden. And in that magic garden, she saw Jesus. And Jesus never said a word to her. He just looked into her eyes, and he held her hands. And when he did that, she said she knew exactly what unconditional love was. So from that point forward, she was totally dedicated to Jesus and to serving the Father, the Creator. And so that was a factor that was most important also for the raw contact, her great desire to be of service to God, to the Creator, and to do it by communication and specifically by channeling. So those factors, her ability to go into trance and our, the harmony in our group, and then her great desire to be of service to the Creator, were the factors that really seemed to allow the raw contact to occur.
I see. Wow, that's wonderful. I'd never heard that story about when she was a small child.
Yeah, she had that happen a number of times. When she was five, she told her mom and dad about it. And they said, well, you're making that up. That's not real. It didn't really happen. So it never happened again after that. But she still remained a follower of Jesus for the rest of her life.
Let's begin to introduce the idea of how sexuality and sexual energy played into this. My understanding or my recollection from reading the raw material is that it was first brought up as a means for teaching you as a group to help Carla maintain her physical vitality so that the communications could continue. Am I understanding that right?
Well, that's the way it worked, but we were not taught it. Ra didn't tell us about it. We discovered it. All of the Ra contact was based upon our free will. Mm-hmm. They could only give us hints and clues about various things that were important because we needed to make those choices ourselves and not have somebody make them for us. Because when somebody makes choices for you, then you lose the ability to the strength that comes from making your own choices. Mm-hmm. So what happened was that Don and Carl had been together, like I said, for 12 years. But Don didn't really go along with a lot of the practices of the planet. He wasn't into marriage. He wasn't into children. And after the first 6 months, he really wasn't into sex either. Mm-hmm. He says, would you mind if I really prefer to be celibate? So Carla said, okay, I'll try it too. But she tried it for a while, but it didn't work for her. Fortunately, when I came along, she and I had this natural chemistry. And it was just it bloomed like a desert rose, I guess you'd say. So we had this chemistry, and we had been having we shared the intimacy of the sexual energy exchanges. But at that time, we didn't call them that, didn't know that they were that. Mm-hmm. But we discovered that when we had sex the night before a raw session, that session would be much longer than if we didn't. So we finally figured it out somewhere around session 17. That there was a relationship between having sex and the sessions being longer. Mm-hmm. So at that point, then we began to ask some questions and to get some information about how it worked.
Oh, I see. Okay. So tell us a little bit about what you learned, how it was explained, the various energy centers, you know, the chakras in the body and the activation and the blockages that can prevent the transfer from taking place. Can you sort of give us a primer on that?
Well, I'll do my best. There's a lot of information that goes into it.
Yeah.
The basic thing is that what energy is being exchanged is called vital energy, and it's the combined energy of the mind, the body, and the spirit, used in a spiritual or metaphysical sense, not just to go out and play. It doesn't work with one-night stands, or it has to be committed, has to have a purpose behind it, has to be spiritually oriented. Now, these three mind, body, and spirit energies then are available only if both entities have reached their heart chakra, the green ray energy center.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to make it through the red one, which deals with sex, you know, energy with sex and with survival. And then the orange ray deals with a one-to-one relationship at an emotional level with one other person intensely, one at a time. And then the yellow ray deals with groups, you as a part of a group. Group energy is expanding. You see, the energies are expanding as we go up the energy centers.
Mm-hmm.
Then what we're all trying to do on planet Earth in order to make the graduation in fourth density is to get into the heart chakra so that we have a universal love for all people, all things. We attempt to see the Creator everywhere. We attempt to see love everywhere because they are everywhere. This is what we learned in the raw contact, and that's the great challenge of this third density, is to find the Creator and to find love everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So once two people with male and female energies, which is usually a male and a female, but it's not always, it's just male and female energy is the important thing.
Mm-hmm.
So once you have those two people in a committed relationship and have their green ray energy centers open, then sexual energy exchanges become possible. And the way it seems to work is that you can store a lot of energy by foreplay, by delaying orgasm for as long as possible. If you want to store a lot of energy, that's what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in order to release the energy, there's two ways that the energy can be doubled, shall we say, that you can increase the amount of energy besides delaying and storing it through foreplay. If both of you dedicate the lovemaking to the infinite Creator and to service to the Creator, that will also double the energy that is exchanged when you have orgasm.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the second way is if you both have orgasm at the same time, the energy is also doubled. So you can magnify that energy greatly by dedicating the energy exchange to the service of the Creator and by having orgasm, both of you simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's not always, doesn't always work that way. Sometimes you need one and then the other, but that's basically the way it works.
And the energy transfers, even if you don't have simultaneous orgasm, but it would just not be as intensified. Is that right?
Right. The energy is transferred. Both people get the energy. Both people contribute to the energy, and both people get the total of the energy. So there's a lot of energy that can be transferred there. And if you have been able to go higher, say into the blue ray, the throat chakra of communication and inspiration, the energy is also increased and becomes of a different nature. And the same if you get to the brow, the indigo ray and the violet ray and so forth. So there, you have to have the green ray open for a positively oriented entity in order for there to be an energy exchange possible.
Can you explain the difference between chakra activation and like blockages? I know that in these discussions of the effect that you might see between an individual who is green ray activated and one who's, say, blocked in their orange or yellow ray, where they get stuck in sort of a perpetual, insatiable state of just wanting more. Can you talk a little bit about, activation versus blockage?
Okay. In both the orange and in the yellow ray is where blockages can occur. Usually, Ross said that the red ray is not an area where we block. It's a given most of the time. And The violet ray is also the same. It's a given. The violet ray is a thermometer or an indicator, an index of your overall balance of all of your energy centers. But in the yellow and in the orange ray, where we deal with groups in the yellow and individual one at a time in the orange, is where blockages can occur. And Ross said the blockages usually take the form of either a desire to be possessed by the other person or a desire to possess the other person. Mm-hmm. Or a fear of possessing the other person, or a fear of being possessed. Mm-hmm. So there's four different angles there on possession, desire, and fear. So in some degree, a blockage is created when there is any inkling of those types of mind configurations or emotional configurations as you're relating to another person. And that happens frequently. I'm sure you know people are probably aware of that in their own experiences.
Yes, absolutely. So are we imagining a scenario where an individual might be green ray activated but still have a blockage in their orange or yellow center because of one of these fears or desires?
Yes. Though you can be green ray activated and still have a blockage there, maybe a momentary one. Maybe you're jealous of your partner's relationship with somebody else in some fashion, mm-hmm. or you're afraid of something that's going on there, or that they have that fear or misapprehension for you. So one of the most important things that you do if you want to be able to have the energy exchange is maintain a clear communication in your relationship. Mm-hmm. It is really the most important thing that you can do. And Carla and I, well, I learned it from Carla. Carla taught me so much about all of this. I was not a good student for being a mate. I started at a very low estate, but I had a very good teacher, and she taught me a lot. She taught me everything I know, as a matter of fact. But we had a habit of never going to bed without resolving any difficulty. Never let the sun set on an argument. Mm-hmm. Resolve it before you. And I'm just talking about going to bed to have sex. I'm talking about going to bed,
yeah.
Going to sleep. Solve your problems of the day that day. Mm-hmm. Don't let them fester. Don't let them build. Don't let them be covered up by confusion or anger or anything. Mm-hmm. Talk. Be clear. And that was really necessary. And like I said, she was so good at that. She didn't necessarily teach me by teaching me. She taught me by doing it.
Yeah.
Right. And I learned by watching and experiencing with her. So, you need to communicate, and you need to clear those energies below the heart. If there's anything between the red ray up to the green ray, you've got to clear it out, or mm-hmm. the energy exchange won't happen. Sex may happen, but the energy exchange may not happen.
Right. Now, can you tell us the difference between the energy that's transferred from the male to the female versus the energy that's transferred from the female to the male?
Yeah, this is something that took us a while to grasp because it's based upon the concepts of the archetypical mind, which is book four, which has crossed a lot of people's eyes. But the male, apparently, this is male principle. This isn't the male biological. Usually biological males have this principle and biological females have theirs, but we're talking about a principle here that Ross said that each male is female, each female is male. Mm-hmm. So we all have both those qualities. So the male principle that we're talking about is the reaching. Just like the sun sends the rays of light to Earth, and Earth reaches for those rays and accepts them, becomes vital and full of life because of the life-giving energy from the sun. Mm-hmm. So with the male energy, the male principle is reaches and attempts to share and is able to revitalize the physical energy of the female. Mm-hmm. Because most of the time, females have less physical energy than males do. Mm. Now, the female has an excess of mental, emotional, spiritual energy, which the male doesn't usually have as much as the female has. And I always think that the male got the better deal here because they're getting the higher energies. Mm. That's just my opinion. So those are the energies that are transferred. The female can transfer to the male, the mental, emotional, and spiritual energies. The male transfers to the female, the physical energy. And by that exchange, then both are enhanced and balanced. So they are now a balanced being with both male and female energies and principles circulating through their soul, their spirit body.
Right. Okay. Can you explain what your actual real life experience has been of that energy transfer? Is it something that you're aware of in the moment? Can you literally feel it happening? Or is it more that you notice a long-term effect in your life from what's happening over the course of time?
Well, the energies seem to be different according to how far you've been able to go with activating the energy centers, green, blue, and indigo. Mm-hmm. Ross said that if you're at the green ray and you feel that the love has been made whole, you feel that there's the sense of love after the orgasm and the exchange that nourishes you. You feel vital. You feel re-energized. You feel just whole. Mm-hmm. If you've been able to open and activate the blue ray, then there is not just the feeling of the wholeness, but there's also an inspiration, a clarity that, as Ross said, the eyes look upon a new world, that you see things differently. You begin to experience them differently for a period of time afterward, for a significant period of time. It's not something that stays with you usually all the time. And then if you're able to activate the indigo ray, the brow chakra, then there is the opportunity to feel what we would call a transcendental joy or the unity of the creation. It's a feeling of, well, we all know what an orgasm feels like in the genitals. Mm-hmm. Imagine that in your forehead.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty much what that's like.
Now, is that Gary actually asked me to ask you about that, about the brain orgasm? He is that something that you experienced during this exploration with Carla, or was it something that you had experienced just on your own?
I had begun to experience it on my own. I had attended it was called a survival school in Colorado in the Rocky Mountains back in 1972, a couple of years before I met Carl and Don. And it was a self-therapy program, brain self-therapy. And the theory of the guy who founded the school back in 1957 was that the human brain has a natural function of focusing and allow the energies of the brain to flow into the frontal lobes once you remove certain blockages that are in the way. And that most people have three or four basic anti-life type of blockages that they've been given by parents or teachers or some adult when they were a child. They didn't know they had the right to stand up to them and say, that's not right. You know, I have a right to do this or that or whatever. So we used dream analysis and essaying and neurodramas to discover those blockages. Dreams usually gave us an indication. Then we would write about it with an essay. And then we remember a traumatic experience as a child where we did not have the ability or the right to stand up and say no. And then we would rewrite the script into a neurodrama. And at that time, we stood up and said no. Shout, scream, cry, whatever you need to do, get it out. That was about the time of Arthur Janov's Primal Scream, if you remember that therapy. Mm-hmm. John Lennon was big into that.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the same basic idea. So after going there, I had what was called the frontal lobes experience. My frontal lobes opened up and my brain all of a sudden was alive. And I started having these frontal lobes experiences, which were basically felt like an orgasm in the brain.
Mm. So just an incredible pleasurable sensation in your brain.
Right. And frequently there were also voices and visions that didn't make any sense to me. So I had a number of those. But then when I joined Don and Carla, then that was the first time I had a sexual mate. I didn't have any mates between the time I went through that therapy, the 72 to 74. Mm-hmm. So Carla was the one that I discovered this with and what it was really like to share it with her.
Now, in the process of trying to open and activate the higher energy centers, the Blu-ray throat chakra, fifth chakra, sixth chakra, is that something that you would how would you go about trying to do that? Would it be part of the lovemaking process? Would it be an intention that you would set ahead of time? Would it be something that you were working on in general in your life to try and activate?
I would say yes to most of that you just said. Mm-hmm. Ra gave us exercises called balancing exercises that help you to do all of that simply by using the catalyst or the experiences that come your way in your daily round of activities. Mm-hmm. The whole idea is that before our incarnations, we set before ourselves certain lessons that we wanted to learn that would have a relationship to these energy centers. So that when we came across certain experiences on a daily basis, that we would be prone to see these in a certain light or with a certain bias, with a certain angle in mind, so we could use them for growth, the growth that we hope to have before we came into these incarnations. So the exercise that Ra said was at the end of the day when we were meditating to look back on the day and to see what kind of experience you had during that day that took you off your center of being able to give and receive love with others. Again, this is assuming that you have the green ray open or you're hoping to open it. Mm-hmm. So anything that took you off your center is something that gave you a chance to find balance, because when you're off your center, you're not on balance. So if you were very impatient with somebody in the grocery store or driving a car and they pull in front of you and you got angry and shouted at them, then the way you would work with that is in meditation, you would recreate the situation that caused the impatience or the anger, and you would let it get huge in your mind. You would blow it up ridiculously, absurdly huge. Mm-hmm. And then for just a second, just a moment, you image the exact opposite. You imaged patience. And then if you sit in meditation and allow that patience to build, it builds until it's just as large, equally large as the impatient was to start with. Mm-hmm. So then you look at those two together and you accept yourself for having both of these means by which the Creator knows itself and you know the Creator contained within your being. You accept yourself for having both of these. You accept yourself for being a balanced entity. Mm-hmm. You do that with whatever it is facing you. You have a person, you know, a friend dies, you've had great grief. Then you look to balance it with gratitude for the time you knew them, the time you were together. You do that for as long as it takes for the balance to achieve. You're having problems with, say you're very disciplined in the work that you do, but sometimes you feel like you're just too robot-like, and maybe you want to be a little more carefree, so you attempt to balance discipline with being carefree, or the other way around. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter which way you approach it. The idea is to get balance.
I see.
So whatever happens in your daily round of activities, then you use that as what Baba Ram Dass would call grist for the mill. Mm-hmm. You use it to grow. That's your food for growth for the day. Mm. And it's not by chance that what happens to you and the way you see it then is focused upon certain energy centers, because we have made those choices before the incarnations, according to Ron, according to a lot of other people that if you're familiar with Dr. Michael Newton, Dr. Brian Weiss, yeah. the life between life regressions, we choose all of this. You know, as Ross said, there are no mistakes. There are no accidents. There are surprises, but there are no mistakes. Mm-hmm. So our daily round of activities, we see in a certain way to bring us the opportunity to balance and activate certain energy centers. So it's not that you set out to say, well, I'm going to open this energy center by doing this and this and this. You just pay attention to what happens to you in your daily round of activities, because you already planned that. It's already in the works. Just pay attention.
I see. Okay, that's fascinating. So your life just shows you what you are needing to work on. And as long as you pay attention and balance it in the way that you've described, then whatever activations are meant to occur will evolve and occur.
Right.
So bringing all that back into the sexual context, and maybe you can help me where we need to go next in this discussion, but I want to understand what the effects would be as you are able to work with this catalyst and balance and begin working in these higher energy centers, what would the effect be in your sexual relationship? And maybe this is where we begin talking about the concept of high sexual magic.
What happens then is that your energy centers become more and more open. The more open your energy centers are as a result of you working on them with the balancing exercises on a regular basis, a daily basis, is that you're able to transmit more energy through them. More energy is available for your use. And I had mentioned before how one way to double the energy exchange was to dedicate the experience of the sexual energy to the one creator, to the service of the creator in whatever way you could. Mm. And what we did, of course, was we were having the raw contact, so we had something very specific to dedicate it to. Mm-hmm. The high sexual magic is basically a means by which two entities can become able to make a contact with the one creator. Magic, the classic definition of magic is the ability to create changes in consciousness at will. Ra went just a little further with that and said magic is the conscious ability to gain access to the subconscious mind. In each instance, you are attempting then to have what the mystics and yogis and saints throughout the ages have called a unitive experience, an experience of the creator in some fashion. It can be experienced in the green, the blue, the indigo ray, or even in the violet ray. So what you're attempting to do is to dedicate yourself to the service of the creator and then also to experience the joy of union with the creator at whatever level you can. Mm-hmm. So that's the magic. The magic is being able to raise your consciousness in a fashion that you are, I would say, I don't want to really say directing it because you're not directing it or controlling it. You're making yourself available and you're actually giving yourself over to it. But you are taking steps that allow it to occur. So you're participating in moving in that direction, I guess. Mm-hmm. Is the best way to put it, because control is not a positive idea. Control is a negative idea, and then that's a whole other field.
Right.
And I have no interest in it.
yeah.
So what you're trying to do is to experience more joy, the union with the creator, to know more of the creator's will, because doing the will of the creator seems to have a great deal of spiritual satisfaction to it, that it also raises your consciousness. So that's the whole thing is some people who are perhaps not engaged in what we were, channeling entities, if they were engaged in high sexual magic, they would be having a certain ritualistic sexual experience that would be dedicated to a certain type of experience. That I have not gotten into myself, so I can't tell you a lot about it, but I know that other people can engage in high sexual magic by rituals that are recognized within the white ceremonial magic. Mm-hmm. Couldn't tell you about how to do that.
Right. Okay. Tell me a little bit more about what your experience with, like, what does sex look like, in the real world for a couple that is evolving in this way? Is it to build up the sexual energy and the foreplay, and it sounds like it's really about intention and commitment and communication. How does it play out?
Yeah, Carla described it as playing in the fields of the Lord, like children, playing and just having such a wonderful time, but doing it consciously and feeling a real motivation to be of service. A motivation to experience the joy and to share the joy with another person, the joy of feeling some unity of the creator. Carla would sometimes she would have, multiple orgasms were pretty common.
Right.
For both of us, but especially for Carla. Sometimes she would be having orgasms for 15 or 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So, and she felt that during that time that she was feeling a union with the Creator. Mm-hmm. And that she could see me as the Creator, and that she could see everything as the Creator. After a while, it just becomes beyond words, you know. I mean, it's
yes,
ecstatic. It's, you know, pretty easy description, but it doesn't quite catch it.
Yes, exactly. And for yourself, did you have to, in order to experience multiple orgasms as a male, it requires a little bit more control, I guess, or learning to allow yourself to reach a level of pleasure without having an ejaculation. Is that something you had to purposely train yourself to do, or did it just kind of happen naturally?
Well, it kind of happened naturally, I guess, because I really liked to delay, because it always made things so much better. And Carla was now and then saying, would you just come, please? Because, you know, it might have been one of those times when she had an orgasm before I did, and I was just playing and playing and playing.
Yeah.
And she's saying, okay, no. No, she was joking as she said that.
Yeah.
But, I did like to delay, and it was something that didn't seem to be difficult to do.
Did either of you have any exposure or interest in Tantra as a practice?
Not really, but it's kind of like what happened when we were successful at delaying long enough.
Yeah.
We didn't set out to say, well, let's try some Tantra yoga tonight, but it might turn out that you know, somebody had observed that, well, you're doing Tantra yoga.
No. Right, right. Yeah. What can you say about the contrast between this sexual relationship you had with Carla to the relationships you may have had in your past? Try and articulate what the difference is.
Oh, there are so many differences. And, you know, the differences were that I had been through that brain self-control and opened up my frontal lobes. And I'd never done that with anybody before. And only Carla and I ever had sexual relations. We, you know, were faithful to each other. So I had never had sexual relations with anybody else with that ability available. So that is right away is an unfair light shined upon any foreign partners.
Mm-hmm.
Also, as I said, I was not a real good candidate for a mate to start with. It was interesting that, I was raised as an only child, and when I was on the land by myself for 6.5 years, I never felt a day of loneliness. I always have been happy to be alone.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first joined Don and Carla, that was a really good thing, because Don and Carla were the couple at that time. They'd been together for 12 years, and mm-hmm. I enjoyed being by myself, so that worked out perfectly. When Don passed away in 84, then within 2 years, Carla and I decided that, you know, we're going to keep the work going, we're going to be together. It just makes sense to get married, because that's the most powerful way to be together, is to, you know, a committed relationship. And so we did. But I still had that flavor of, you know, solitary nature and liking solitude. And it was something that I had to work with. And fortunately, she was patient enough with me to work with me, because I was not, like I said, a good candidate for a one-on-one relationship. Don was a really good balance in Carlos and my relationship, because he could provide this. Well, I don't know if you read in the Raw Contact where there are some entities that can have a sexual fusion type relationship with another without having sex.
Yes, yes.
Don and Carla were that kind. That's what Don felt, basically. I had to learn how to be with Carla, and it took me a little while. But once I finally, you know, graduated and saw the light, it was the most beautiful thing in the world. And I was so grateful that she was patient with me to take the time to teach me how to be a mate. Mm.
I think you're probably a little hard on yourself.
Yeah, well, You don't know. I was not a good student.
Oh, well, what would you say to anyone who's interested in learning more about this or trying to incorporate these principles into their life? Where would they begin? Meditating, perhaps?
Meditation is always the best thing, I think, to do. That's been the primary message from the Confederation of Planets in the Service of the Infinite Creator ever since we made contact with them back in 1961. Mm. Meditation is the way to get where you're going. It's the way to learn how to get to fourth density. It's the way to learn how to get into good relationships. It's the way to learn how to find the Creator within you. I say whatever your spiritual practice is, you know, there's all kinds of ways of practicing meditation and of moving along the spiritual path of evolving in mind, body, and spirit. Find somebody to do that with. Find somebody you're totally committed to. And do it together. Share. So many of the people that are interested in the Law of One, unfortunately, don't have a mate that they can share it with. And that's, I guess that's the case with spiritual seekers all over the world. Sometimes it doesn't happen that you are with somebody that is same in their interests as you are. Mm-hmm. But if you can, in any way, whatever, share whatever your journey is with your mate or your loved one. And that's the way to really get. And just, you do it every day. Just make that the center of your day. Make it something greater than yourself that you're both committed to. Yeah. I think that's the secret.
Mm. Actually, you bring up an interesting point, whether you had encountered anywhere in any of these teachings anything about the solo sexual energy. You know, in my own experience, my initial introduction to the idea of sexual energy at all as being something separate from, you know, just the act was during meditation alone. And I wasn't in partnership at the time and started to experience ecstasy just within my own body and sphere. And I'm curious if there's any teachings out there about that experience.
There probably are. I don't know about them, though. Mm. I'm afraid I don't have any information on that. I'm sorry. But good for you. That sounds wonderful.
Oh, it was. It's certainly spun my life off in a different direction than I expected. Well, okay. I guess that'll bring us to the end of this conversation. I encourage everyone to go to the website and just spend a long time reading information there, because there's so much to learn and digest. And then, as Jim said, just turn inward, meditate, and connect with your partner and see what you can discover.
Indeed. Everything on the website is free for downloads.
If you want books,
we charge for the books, but everything that we've ever produced is there for free if you want to download it.
What's next for you personally?
Well, I'm having more opportunities like we're doing right now is to speak to people and podcasts, Skype, and I've been invited to do a couple of lectures here and there. So I guess getting out into the world, because Don in the original days was the one who did the talking. He was a natural teacher. He was a professor. Mm-hmm. And then after he passed away, Carla just naturally took up the mantle, and she was so beautiful when she was on. She could channel from her subconscious or whatever. She just could inspire an audience. So now I'm going to try to do it on my own. And
yeah.
I guess that's what's up for me now.
Okay. Well, I think we're at the end of the interview. I just can't thank you enough for agreeing to do this. And
oh, it's been my pleasure. I've really enjoyed it. It's a real honor to be able to share information that we've, you know, gone through a number of years and experiences to gather and to help out people. It was always Don's dream to be able to make this information available worldwide for free, and the internet allows us to do that.
So there you have it, everyone, the end of Season 1 of the Bliss Runner podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode. To see the show notes, head on over to my website at www.blissrunner.com and look for episode number 13. While you're there, pick up a copy of my free guided meditation. This is my version of the guided meditation that started this whole thing for me, and I want you to have it for free. Until next season, I remain blissfully yours.